Welcome to the Education Pre-Hospital Care Research Forum Journal Club. Here in our PCRF Journal Club, we promote evidence-based practices by critically evaluating the latest science in emergency medical services. We hope our discussion will help advance EMS practice. Through the generous support of our sponsor, Limmer Education, we can make science more accessible and understandable.
All right, welcome. Thanks for everybody. Oh, oops, we got feedback here. Let me get my slides going.
Yeah, your thing needs to be silenced. Hi, everybody. Welcome in the room and those online to the May 2025 Education Research Journal Club of the PCRF, the Pre-Hospital Care Research Forum. And we would like to thank, first of all, our sponsor, Limmer Education. You all in the room probably saw them in the exhibit hall. We'll thank them for sponsoring all of our research and research journal clubs. We actually have two of them. So you'll find out that we have a clinical research journal club, and this is the education research journal club. And we have been live from AccreditCon from the very beginning. So we are, again, for those online, live at AccreditCon in Anaheim, California. And this is the seventh, I believe, AccreditCon, sixth in person, or maybe I got that backwards. We had a 1 year off for, you know what, we don't say anymore. And we're back live, and we're going to, again, stay with it. But Guy, can you remember the first year we did this? And Kim, I think you might have been there. We were in a hallway. We just said, hey, last minute, let's do a journal club, and let's just do it in the hall. Bring my computer. Dave will sew the curtains, and we'll just have it in the hall. And so we did it in the hallway. And then we kept doing the journal clubs, you know, live, which I think it adds a little bit of flavor. So now you've got, we decided to do it at a different time. So thanks to those online who joined us at this different time, but you're accommodating our guests here who are in the room, who are at lunch. Don't forget to get some lunch. So the great lunch being served. I think the line's gone down now. And we're at, again, AccreditCon. We saw an amazing keynote today from Heather Davis, Dr. Heather Davis, that fits so well with what we're going to talk about today. So this article that we're going to be covering in the May 2025 Education Research Journal Club is an open access article. So you can look this up. It's in BMC Medical Education, and it's entitled Understanding Higher Order Constructs of Leadership and Communication in EMS Clinical Judgment. That sounds a mouthful. And it is, I will tell you, I had to read this article several times, but it's one of those articles that the more I read it, the more I liked it, and the more I appreciated it. One of the authors, Jonathan Powell, I don't know if he's going to join us, but he might be in the audience at some point.
They just put Osh to speaker.
So oh, excellent. Excellent. So we have Dr. Osh Panchal also from the National Registry. This comes out of the National Registry. Just before we get to the first slide here, I want to remind people that if you do end up leaving or you miss anything, any part of it, you want to grab some lunch and you didn't get some and come back, we do record these, and they are all on our YouTube channel. So they're on youtube.com/@PCRF@UCLA, and there's both the clinical and the education are there. You can check those out, and we archive them back so you can go back to those. This has become one of my favorite diagrams, and it is, you saw it this morning, Dr. Heather Davis had it in her slide set. If you haven't read the original article that goes with this, this is an absolute must for educators. And this is of the clinical judgment framework. You know how nursing has theories, you know, there are theories of practice. Well, guess what? We have a theory of practice now, a framework on which to build everything from education to practice, and continuing education, initial education, assessment, licensure, certification. So this is a look at this construct, and we've gone through this before. So if you look back in some of our journal clubs, Kim, you did a review of how this came about. We looked at that article in the past. But in this article, what they're looking at is And when you come up with a theoretical framework or a construct, one of the things you think about in research is construct validity. How valid is the construct that we're looking at? And so now the National Registry has launched a series of different research projects that look at the validation of this construct. And we'll get into like more about how we can, you know, use this to again assess and continuously assess competency, the maintenance of competency over time. But is Dr. Panchal, are you on?
Can we hear?
I don't know if I can hear him on here. Let's
see. Yep, I'm here.
Oh, I'm you here, are you? Great. Would you mind speaking to this project?
Yeah, I don't want to take away too much of your esteem of what you guys are talking about, but I'll give a general framework of the large structure. So one of the things that started out back in 2020 is we did the updated practice analysis for EMS ALS care. And at that time, we realized very early on, and I think we've known this in our literature for years, is the importance of clinical judgment in all of our practice. And one of the key concepts there is that we really need to understand and define what clinical judgment is for ourselves, because we've been using interrelated words like crazy, decision-making, reasoning, whatever, what have you. And going back to the theoretical framework that Megan was just talking about was the first step in this process. Since then, we have built upon that knowledge with 4 or 5 manuscripts to talk about all these different aspects of clinical judgment. Now, this manuscript that we're talking about today is taking one important piece of the larger framework of the clinical judgment concept and really kind of blowing it out a little bit more. And what that is understanding higher order constructs. So I think all of us who are active clinicians know the conceptual framework that leadership, communication, these are really, really important skills and important talents to engender in all of our EMS clinicians. And they are critical as we start trying to take care of patients. Now, clinical judgment in of itself helps us move towards making those, having that clinical reasoning to process what's going on, and then finally making that endpoint decision. But all of that is in a framework of different pieces of leadership and communication. So one of the big questions that was out there for us that we still didn't understand is whether or not leadership and communication are subsumed underneath clinical judgment, or are these higher order constructs above clinical judgment? And that's really important to understand when you're building this kind of theoretical framework, because you want to know, do I need to have whole domains on leadership? Do I need to have whole domains on communication? Or are these talents and skills actually enmeshed in the larger frameworks that we're looking at? And that's what this paper is directed at, is trying to piece that out and get an idea of that concept. Megan, does that give you enough to work with?
Yeah, I think that's great. And if you, for people in the back of the room, if you haven't seen this, you can look this up. It's on the National Registry website. It's in many, many different areas. But you can see it goes from dispatch to post-scene. Clinical judgment is up here as a higher order. And then you have underneath it two other higher order constructs, leadership and communication. So that's what Dr. Panchal is referring to. And then these cycles of, you know, the thing, the recognizing cues, analyzing them, driving analysis, all of these circular generating solutions, taking action, evaluation in both the pre-scene, the scene, and the post-scene. Those generate a more specific framework for assessment and evaluation underneath those larger, higher order constructs. So I'll read the goal paper. The overall objective is to evaluate commonality between tasks associated with leadership and communication with those of clinical judgment, to identify whether these higher order constructs are, like the model shows and the framework shows, subsumed underneath clinical judgment. And so the way this was done is something that's familiar to the National Registry, working with it says industrial and occupational psychologists, excuse me, and subject matter experts, and doing a task analysis. So I've never participated. Have you participated in one of those? The task analysis did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell us about it, because this part, anybody in this room, ever participate in a task analysis?
So most of you actually probably could raise your hands because in the old days, if you're old school, we all participated in a task analysis by replying to a recertification survey. That's one of the ways in which you can do a task analysis. There are more robust ways, which of course now Dr. Panchal and the National Registry are using, such as being able to look at electronic run reports and seeing what EMS providers actually do in the field. So by asking current providers what it is, what tasks they perform, you create that list of tasks that we should educationally be teaching to. Technically, as educators, we probably should have done this. We should be doing this on our own. We're lucky that the National Registry has a robust engine and process. And back in the old days, you could actually write the registry and they would be able to charge you $1 for shipping and send you a PDF of these tasks. Then you could create a curriculum around it. Now, it is published in Pre-Hospital Emergency Care, peer-reviewed journal, and this informs us even further about higher order tasks that really wouldn't show up as a psychomotor task, such as, or a clinical condition that the patient would present in if we looked at the charts. But in this case, a group of experts is really deeply thinking about that clinical judgment, the metacognitive processes that in fact translate to a measurable test question on the National Registry are informed by these frameworks that allow us to think, what is the provider needing to be able to do?
Yeah, great.
How's that?
That sounds great. Anybody in here in their master's program or doctorate program or working on a dissertation?
Oh, quite a few,
yeah. Wonderful. Yeah. Okay, so that's great. This means, and the reason I ask you that is a couple of reasons. One is we're going to talk about methodology in a second here beyond the task analysis. The other thing is this one framework is multiple dissertations, right? In the waiting. So if you need a framework, a theoretical framework, you're looking for ideas, here you go. Pick a part of this and join in to the research effort on enhancing the construct validity of this framework. It only strengthens the profession, it strengthens education and how we do education, how we get competent providers. So the study design of this was called a hybrid traditional approach to task analysis. So typically there's a traditional approach, which I've never done this. So it's great to hear, you know, how you do it. Dan, you were saying you've participated in this. So there's that traditional approach where you're actually beginning with the definition of these work behaviors or duties or responsibilities. And then you're asking the tasks. The hybrid approach asks for the task list to be created based on the domain first. So it almost allows for more kind of brainstorming or something around it. I can't even imagine the amount of data that this generates. But and they did it by focus group. And so they had focus group participants that were recruited. And I believe when there were subject matter experts, there was, again, industrial and occupational psychologists that were able to assist with kind of operational definitions, ensuring that everyone was clear, doing training on how to do the task analysis. They did some virtual training. And then the subject matter experts, if they weren't people who participated before in the National Registry prior task analysis, they recruited from kind of nationally known folks that were involved, if I got that right. And you can correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, Dr. Panchal, just interpreting the article itself. Also, you should know about this article, can't put all the data in this article because there's for editorial space. But there are appendices that are referred to that give you all the details about how they did this, and then also all of the different tasks and domains and subdomains. Okay, so let's start looking at what they, unless, do you have anything to add to the methodology? Yeah. Okay, so now we've got, and I'm going to pull up there's three tables. You guys in here can't see them because they're tiny, and this is a very long room, but you can, again, this is open access if you want to pull up the article itself. What they did was they're showing you an example here of one of the tables, and this is the table on completing the task. I should say too, not just the task, but they also asked them then to do the KSAs, the knowledge, skills, and abilities that go with that task. So it got specific as what are the knowledge, skills, and abilities that are needed in order to perform this task.
Yeah, wait, Ash was going to type in.
Oh, go ahead, Ash.
Yeah, go ahead, Ash.
I was going to just touch base about some of the method stuff that you just talked about, because one of the cool things about this whole scenario was the use of the IO psychologist. And I really want to highlight this because these people are the experts at task analysis. So like, for instance, if you're in respiratory nursing, you go to Akron and you work with Dennis Doverspike and those guys to be these true external facilitators. So the point I wanted to really make is that we had the experts in the room, but the external facilitators are the ones who are data collecting and pulling all of this together, which is kind of the exciting point, because then you have someone who is really overseeing all of this and really letting the data define itself and let that just automatically flow from the experts so that you actually know what your output is. Because one of the challenges as EMS clinicians, and I think a lot of the researchers in the room will agree, is that sometimes our impressions of what is care can influence how those endpoints occur. So that would be just the 2 cents that I would like to add.
Great. And essentially what they were looking for too, so you're developing this task and then these KSAs under each of the tasks. So the analysis was then to look at identifying all the tasks and KSAs that are associated with the three domains. And again, you have two focus, or you have multiple focus groups, right? So pulling together that, assessing the differences in the tasks and KSAs between, they did AEMT and paramedic, but I thought it was really smart to start with paramedic because, as the article explains, you start with paramedic, and then because AEMT is incorporated, is underneath paramedic already. So they would assume that everything under paramedic, AEMT is gonna be there. And then they could ask later whether there's a difference between the AEMT and paramedic certification levels. And then the real key was evaluating for the overlap in communication and leadership with clinical judgment. And then doing a sensitivity analysis to see from the standpoint of clinical judgment, how much commonality there would be in leadership and communication, just as it relates to clinical judgment. So again, doing the analysis methods, it's a great one for people that would raise their hands looking for research or doing your research or in a master's or doctorate program. So the conclusion would be that high commonality would suggest that clinical judgment incorporates those two domains. And then the sensitivity would demonstrate that the commonality, just in your leadership and communication towards clinical judgment, would mean that it is subsumed. Leadership and communication are underneath clinical judgment, rather than the opposite. Because you could say, why are those two constructs underneath clinical judgment? Why is leadership at the top and clinical judgment underneath? So that's how they evaluated it. So they came up with a total of 77 tasks that incorporated 392 KSAs across three domains and 9 subdomains. And then they looked at each first paramedic versus AEMT and found that there wasn't really any difference in the AEMT as compared to the paramedic. The tasks that they came up with, they showed a couple of tables. This is for one of the, this is a complete task and KSA matrix for the domain of clinical judgment, but a subdomain of initial impression. So you see initial impression, and then the subdomain of it's clinical judgment, initial impression. You have the task number, because there's different tasks, mentally prepares to successfully and effectively respond to the situation, and then KSAs, 11 KSAs underneath that task.
What did you think of this, Dave?
I love it. Actually, it's foundational. It's transformational. You have to have this kind of framework in order for us to build not only an assessment that says somebody's ready for field practice, it also informs educators what we should be teaching in class. If you recall, and some of us had enough gray hairs to remember when we were locked in rooms in Pittsburgh at, when one of those moments came that we needed to come up with a new curriculum.
Yeah.
And people thought off the top of their head, yeah, I think they should put nasal gastric tubes in. I think they should do eye washes. And that translated then into Kim McKenna writing a textbook that says, you should put in a nasal gastric tube because it's part of the curriculum. And that may or may not be kind of important to all the way around. And so this process that the registry has done informs us about the current state of EMS practice.
Yeah.
And that informs us what's going to be measurable and very boots on the ground, let's get rubber on the road, what should we be teaching? So textbooks are great, we need them, and they inform us a lot of things, and they have a lot of stuff in them that may not actually apply to current practice. And if we don't continually update this particular task analysis, and if we don't focus on the important things, a shout out to the paper that was just done on those clinical presentations that were in EMS charts, where we discovered we had a lot more mental health patients than were previously given importance in our curriculum. Yay, right? Like, we knew this. If you were working on an ambulance, you see a lot more patients who have mental health issues, and we need it in a framework that educationally we can then translate it to curriculum. So this is part of it, and clinical judgment has been, we knew that you needed to have critical thinking and decision-making and leadership, but now we really have the structure to say, this is part of our profession, and you need to be able to do that, not just, you know, hold somebody's spine in a somewhat neutral position or put a splint on or slide an IV in.
Yep, and we're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater here either. That doesn't mean you are not supposed to be competent at your procedural skills, right? You need to be able to be competent at procedural skills. That's not what this paper is about. That's not what anybody's saying. And actually, Heather had a slide this morning. Dr. Heather Davis presented on assessment this morning. She had a slide up that it might as well have said entrustable professional activities on it. EPAs. If you haven't heard of EPAs, they're all over residency, medicine, education literature. And it's about what do I need to be able to trust that this student can do before we can say that they are competent to be with a patient independently. And so this list that she put up was very similar to what we're talking about. And what comes out of some of these tasks too, and some of these, even the specific KSAs. So, and keep that in mind. And that's why I don't want to knock, like, of course you need to know how to do procedural skills, but this is what we really want to be able to trust that students.
Yeah, I like table one. I like the whole paper, but table two for me really kicks it off. And in table one, there's like flexibility, right? But in table two, the first task up here, maintains boundaries between work and non-work communication, especially in the context of social media. Right, we knew this was a task, but we now have it written down and it's formal. And it really means that there's more to being a clinician than just the procedure that you're going to perform or the knowledge that you're supposed to be able to use. It has context, and that's what I really like about this.
Yeah, and this table, so the table two for those in the back is the same task, KSA matrix, a piece of it. This is for, there are two other subdomains that aren't shown here. That's table one. Table two is for the domain of communication. This is, again, communication that has these subtasks. That was one of them, maintains boundaries.
Including giving feedback.
Yes.
A provider needs to be able to provide constructive feedback. So if you're not already thinking, how do I translate this into my classroom? One would imagine that we should be teaching our students how to give each other constructive feedback so that they can do that when they're in the field working with each other.
Yeah, and some of these are, I would say, a little bit more appropriate to continuing education. When you look down at the bottom, there's the ninth task is carries out directions, even those that may not be liked, like relevant for management or middle management.
And writing down mileage and insurance information.
And the KSA is skill in maintaining a positive attitude in the face of conveying unpopular directions.
Yeah.
Skill in being a proponent of material that you may personally be an opponent of, which is interesting. So yeah, there's some of this applies at all levels. I would say too, when we're talking about this, I think of educators. There's a lot of education theory. There are frameworks for education. Are we doing this kind of entrustable professional activity for educators? What should our educators need to have before they're independently teaching EMTs, teaching paramedics?
I love how it translates to here's empowering people to speak up. So for research management and pre-incident reviews, post-incident reviews, preparation. So if you ever wondered what's on the National Registry, hey, look at this list, because these are the behaviors that we should be teaching and measuring and assessing. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, Kim.
Dr. Poncho. Oh.
I'd like to ask Dr. Poncho, if they were surprised by anything that came up in this
Moment. Yeah, Ash, were you surprised by anything that came up here?
Continually. So when all said and done, this was all over all parts of EMS care. So one of the greatest things about having those IO psychologists is they would argue with us, consistently argue. And so you'd have these great subject matter experts, and they would say, well, you know, this aspect of communication is important. The IO psychologists be like, why? Why do we care? And it was a great interplay, and just sitting in the sidelines listening to these arguments generated more ideas, more concepts. And so there's some skill involved in like pulling these conceptual frameworks out of people. And as you start piecing these out, and again, these are only parts of the full tables because they made us cut out a bunch because we just can't put it all on the paper, right? And that was kind of the most exciting part, was actually being around and listening to these conversations. And as these experts would tell you these stories, because you'd hear stories along with each of these things saying, yeah, no, this happened, and this is what it felt like, and these are the concepts behind it. And that was where the robust discussions to pull out all of these tasks and KSAs really came in. Now, the other thing which was really surprising for me is actually the supplement, which I think is the coolest part, is the counterfactual. I bet, Megan, you're going to come to that, so I don't want to steal your thunder there. But that was one of the coolest parts for me as we started talking about it.
That's what I would like you to talk about that for a second. Let me just show the third table and then the fourth one, which supports everything. And then I really want to hear about that part, because I do have like a couple question marks on that. So remember, so this is the table three shows you just another KSA matrix, but this was under the domain of leadership. So you're seeing examples from clinical judgment, communication, now leadership, and the task numbers underneath here. And again, there's more in the appendices, but notice this is pre-scene, and that fits again. Now we're going back under one of those little wheels, those little cycles, and you're seeing things like utilizes dispatch information. Well, isn't that, recognizing cues under that first cycle? So there's elements that you're seeing, and this is, again, generated organically through a task analysis. So I think that's pretty powerful, Ash. Let's see. And then the fourth table is what we're getting to now. This is, again, supporting the hypothesis that higher order construct of clinical judgment subsumes both leadership and communication. You can see the commonality between the tasks that are generated for communication and for clinical and for leadership, having was it 66 and or 61 and 79% commonality with clinical judgment. But tell us about, which is not shown here in a table, if you can tell us about that sensitivity testing.
Sure. So let me extend on what you said here, and then I'll tie it back into that. So in this table, one of the things that's really, really actually shocking for me when we look at this concept is the overall commonality. When you think of a higher order construct, that's a definable construct. That should be something that can stand on its own, and that your knowledge and tasks and KSAs are surrounded by these very definitive areas and conceptual frameworks. When you see these commonalities to this extent, like you would think 69 and 79 isn't all that much, it's actually a pretty good amount where you have that much overlay between these things. Now, the real question is, if you really want to prove that something is subsumed under something else, you need to look at the opposite argument. So the opposite argument would be, okay, how much of communication is overlapped with clinical judgment? So the true counterfactual, so that you can understand, okay, it's only this percentage or what case may be. Now, that's all actually in the supplemental. And the supplemental, I actually like the supplemental better than some of the tables in the main document that the reviewers wanted. Because in the supplement, appendixes 4 and 5 really show like the overlap, the Venn diagram of communication and clinical judgment, and have the key tasks in there so you can actually see which ones are lost. But in appendix 6 and 7 is where we start talking about the counterfactual. And that means the complete opposite of clinical judgment against communication and clinical judgments of leadership. And the overlays were 38% and 46%. So it really gives you an idea of how much more clinical judgment is dominant and subsumes these other two high order frameworks, and really gives you the both concepts. If I just showed you table 4, without the counterfactual, I don't think it's nearly as convincing. So that was the reason why we looked at it in both directions.
I bet you're glad that you ended up doing that in your methodology. It would be, that can happen too when you're doing research, is you design it a certain way, something comes out and you say, I wish I would have done it, and added something else to it. So that made it so much more powerful. So one of the most powerful, I have a couple of things starred in here in your discussion. The discussion section alone is very powerful in this paper. This is an important step to enhance VMS initial and continuing education, clinician assessment, and the development of clinical tools that support decision-making. And I would say educational tools that support assessment and evaluation as well. So, and then this cohesive construct for reproducible instruction and assessment. I love that. That's, again, something that Dr. Davis was talking about this morning. This whole idea that the theoretical framework that we see, and I'll put it back up, it incorporates our field. I think that also is a good thing to really underscore here. It really incorporates that EMS field from dispatch to handoff all the way through, post-scene. That process information cycle, cue recognition, analysis, solution generation, and action, all while incorporating those higher order functions. I thought that was incredibly powerful. So I think the conclusion to this was that it provides some construct validity to the theoretical framework that we can now say this is sort of what is framing right now our profession going forward, and also actually this is another piece in the discussion for credentialing and accreditation processes. This is a critical step in the development of assessments to evaluate pre-hospital clinical judgment. So what do you think, Dave, in terms of where do we go from here? And if anybody has any ideas out here, where do we go from here?
Yeah, I'm curious. First of all, there's a lot of people in the room, and this can be interactive. This does not need to be one way. So wondering if anybody has questions. We have mics for the room and reactions from the experts, you
that
are sitting
online.
In the room. We have the author online, and we can definitely ask some questions. Ash, how were the participants selected? I noticed that 8 of them had PhDs, a very representative sample of people working in the field. And it looked like 16 were urban type of communities that they represented. I'm ripping you a little bit, but can you just describe how an expert is selected here? And please raise your hand as we, so that if you have questions or comments. Go ahead, Ash.
Okay, great. So you're totally right. Our intention wasn't to have all of our experts be frontline clinicians, though many of them are. That was one of the key concepts that we wanted to make sure we integrated in the work, is to make sure that we had frontline representation. Now, the big thing is, because we're getting into the span of understanding how education is and how that ties to the clinical practice, we needed subject matter experts who actually understand both sides of the coin. So these are rare birds, right? And so the way we found these rare birds is we literally reached out, and they were nominated by national organizations across the system. So NAMT and NASEMSO, NAMSP, so on and so forth, so that we could get those experts that we need who can chime in on all these things. Because let's be honest, they're unicorns who understand educational frameworks, the concepts of domains, what needs to be taught, and have the depth of knowledge to argue about all these different aspects. Because, like, take for instance, when we were talking about communication and all these different pieces about social media and all those nuances, there's a lot of nuance there that having somebody with those kind of strong frameworks are really critically important. Now, the cool part of this study is we leverage the 2020 EMS Practice Analysis Group. So this is the people who did the first practice analysis with us, so had a great idea and conceptual framework of how these types of IO psychology type work gets done. Now, of course, as time goes by, we have people who step away and are just not available. And so we backfilled into the rest of the group on those individuals. And that's how we got to the point of having our expert panel.
Cool. I'm looking towards the room to see as people have questions, and monitoring the chat as well. So if you're in the chat, do definitely pipe up. I think next steps, wouldn't you say, and we have people here who are National Registry Board members, this is a foundational piece for the registry to understand how it does the work that it does to measure competence. And so if this is going to take us from a pre-scene, on-scene, post-scene, it really immediately translated into a test that then had those elements within a scenario. Am I right?
Yeah, when I see those cycles, also I see the way that you can run simulations as well, right? When you look down underneath those cycles, and if you have a door sign, say, to a simulation, they read their door sign, you're going to go into this, you can stop them right there. What do you think? Or you just ping the audience of your students and say, okay, you have an 8-year-old with shortness of breath, that's your dispatch, what are you thinking? And they should all come up with their analogy, shortness of breath, COPD, CHF, pneumonia. But, oh, I didn't say 8, I said 8 months. Now what do you think? And then you get them to think in that way. That first part of the curve. And when they get there, what are they thinking? It really reminds me of those scenarios from AMLS, where after the scenario, you have to do differential diagnosis and pull apart like what their different ideas of what might be going on with the patient, and then defend each one of them, and then they find their own gaps.
Listen to your words. They're analyzing, defending. These are higher order thought processes that we knew mattered to being able to do the job, but we're really kind of stuck in the bottom feeding, scum sucking, lowest levels of that regurgitation, repetition, definition. And that's where a lot of the old school, the curriculum said you need to be able to define and explain. Now we really, I think, see the truth of the matter, I don't think this is anything new. We were always expecting people to figure out what's going on. We always expected them to analyze it. And we didn't articulate that as part of our goal. What we said is explain this, but explain it, Lucy, but I don't understand how to do that and then actually do it. So these are foundational. Yeah.
I was just gonna say this sort of also sort of goes back to what Heather was talking about this morning. It's not just the National Registry that needs to be measuring these things. in your program, measuring them in many, many different ways, in the clinical sites, in the field sites, in the classroom, and how they interact with others, like in scenarios and simulations. I think that there are opportunities for you to really look at, are we really assessing all of these things constantly through the program and giving the learners feedback about how they're performing in these areas so that they can improve and then be successful at the end?
Yeah, I think we often abdicate responsibility when it comes to anything vehicular. We're like, that's the employer. We don't do that. Oh, those are stretchers. They do that. And yet, I think that in this, we see elements of like a pre-shift beginning check of that vehicle, and then understanding that all of your equipment is there, that you've done some pre-planning, and also not skipping over the cognitive part of, you were just dispatched to this particular problem. What are your thoughts before you arrive? We tend to just hurry up, do that at the door, go into the sim. So now we have a little bit further to just both pre and post incident manage that reflection on action. And I like that Dewey quote that's on every one of your emails that basically says experience isn't the teacher, it's the reflection on that experience. So this is, in fact, leading us down that experiential education mantras.
Yeah. And I just want to defend the bottom feeding, scum sucking in one way. And that is, we have this tendency in education to be given tools to come out of the field and go into education, to have to learn how to become an educator. And one of the things I thought was very powerful that Heather did today was she gave us tools. And so we can, this is kind of a higher level article. We're now going to need to develop, and that's what it was saying in the discussion section here, tools based upon this. So I think that's really important because educators know how to check a box and look at somebody doing a skill. But do they, when you ask people to do that, think about the struggles people have with affective evaluations, even though there's very specific tools available. It's the same thing. So,
Ash has a comment about that. He wants to spike up. Go ahead.
No, I want to expand on what you guys were saying, because I think that is a big piece here. And the other piece to think about is that we can finally be intentional about clinical judgment. We know how much that affects patient outcome. We recognize that that is critical for everything we do. We even make decision tools to enhance it, right? And so now we can truly be intentional as we give them specific cues and allow them to analyze those cues, make their own hypotheses. And these can be reproducible cues that we do all the time. So we actually have another paper out where we applied this basic conceptual framework in a simulation of a geriatric fall. And we used this to compare against a medical director's impression if clinical judgment was done appropriately against a rubric score. And it matched perfectly. So it also steps up the way we do evaluation, matching what we think should exactly be done. Of course, the other thing to look at is the last paper, the most recent paper, which was really looking at how to put this together for testing and to see how robust an evaluation you can get without making the registry's examinations any more difficult. In fact, it makes it a little more comfortable because you're doing scenarios that you're kind of experiencing.
So what you're saying is that you're going to be helping us with rubrics for simulation and performance-based testing. Since the psychomotor exam is gone and we now have to do it as educators, the National Registry research team is going to help us come up with some valid instruments. Did you hear that?
Well, you have one already out there published.
Innovation here as to your assistance in assisting us as educators.
Did we have it?
Well, the great thing is, Dave, the great thing is you do actually have a template of how to build these type of items. And it is published in PEC as open source. So you can actually get that template. It has a hypoglycemia case in there. So you can actually generate cases straight out of there.
Very cool. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate that. It's
always thanks, Dr. Paschal.
And we totally
my pleasure, guys.
That research. And thank you all in the room for joining us. Stay tuned. I'll have the QR code in just a second. We're going to do our little spiel that we are going to be back. June 27th, 10 a.m. Pacific, noon Central. And we're talking about the use of immersive simulation to teach research skills. Research, it's like breathing fresh air, isn't it? Don't you feel like you got a big breath of fresh air? Now go get dessert. Okay, next, we also have the clinical. That's Dr. Remley Crowe, Dr. Tony Fernandez, Bill Toon, a number of people that joined that. And then that will be on Monday, June 9th. And remember, you can register at freehospitalcare.org. And make sure you visit the archives. There's a lot of good stuff back there. And here's your QR code.
Please do get continuing education for attending a research journal podcast. But we want you to join and join with your students so they can meet the curriculum requirement of participating in research just by joining one of these journal clubs, have them read their article, and read the article, listen to the podcast, but have a discussion in class, or just type in and share your thoughts. This is the most educators that have ever attended a journal club at a credit gone, and I just want to thank you. It is completely uplifting to have you in this room. Thank you.
A reminder, you're going through your CAPC apps, right?
Yeah, make sure you go through your CAPC app. And then if you can't get it, you can get it at the front desk or the registration.
Does it say?
My God.
Thanks, everyone. And I'm going to do our outro now, Stephanie.
We hope you have enjoyed and learned from this PCRF Journal Club. Please share it with other interested EMS professionals. An archive of past journal clubs can be found at www.pcrfpodcasts.org. You can also find us on Facebook at PCRF at UCLA and on our website at www.prehospitalcare.org. A special thank you to our sponsor, Limmer Education, providing education tools for success at every stage of your EMS journey.